Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show, everyone. I'm here today with Anca Trifon. Anca, how are you today?
I am doing really well, Travis. What about yourself?
Oh, I'm doing fabulous. Thanks for asking. I know it's a Monday, and sometimes Mondays have those different connotations, but Anca is the founder, creator, CEO of Trifon Events, a boutique event planning and production agency that's offering event production, consultation, and planning, experience design, production management, and live streaming for live, virtual, and hybrid events. She's also the host of Events Demystified, which I was the guest not too long ago on that show. I don't know if the episode is published or not. And a tactical podcast for anyone in the events industry, beginner or pro, where entrepreneurs, events professionals, influences, and event industry leaders from the events community share their personal and professional experiences with her audience. Anca has worked in event productions for over 20 years, has extensive experience and knowledge in the areas of technical event productions, event planning, event design, and management, and will walk you through the entire event planning and production process with the highest level of standards to design a perfect and seamless event in person, virtual, or hybrid. And that's exactly why we have you here today. Today, we're going to talk about hybrid events on a budget and some tips and tricks to make sure you can do it and get it done, make it look good. So you guys do events, I guess, huh? What, like, are they in-person only? Are they virtual only? Are they hybrid? I looked at some of your videos and I was pretty impressed with what I saw.
Well, there is a lot to be said about what happened to events in the last almost 2 years, right? Since 2020, March of 2020 is when our industry got hit by the pandemic, and it certainly put a wrench, just to, you know, mildly say what happened. And it changed for, I think, for the better, the way we do events, we think about events, we host events, and we produce them. So as far as I was concerned, as an event producer, as an event planner and manager, I've done in-person events for almost 20 years now, basically right out of college. It just from radio, I went into events, because when I moved to US, the only thing that I could think in my mind that I could do besides radio, because at the time I thought that having an accent would not be a good thing, it was event production. So I love sound engineering. I love mixing. And I just went straight into event productions. And it's been a long journey. But coming back to what happened in 2020 is that's when we hit this halt into what's going to happen to our events, because we cannot gather. I remember it was end of February. I had an event in Portland at the Oregon Convention Center. And we had almost 1,000 people. And the next week is when events just shut down. It was mid of March where we were going to have another in-person event at another venue and about 600 people, but we couldn't. So then we had to stop and like, okay, now what are we going to do? So that kind of started this onset of virtual events. And a virtual event can be defined as so many different things. And everybody started calling virtual events whatever fit their bill, right? When I think of a virtual event, I think more of a higher production value added to that event than just a Zoom meeting. It's not that Zoom meetings are not beneficial, and we've seen a lot of business done over Zoom meetings, and we've seen a lot of progress done. I mean, I've met people like yourself and a lot of other people over Zoom, and I would have never gotten the chance to do that, right, in person or any other way. So there's been a lot of opportunities. I just feel like with Zoom, it's gotten such a bad rap with how there's Zoom fatigue, and we've done way too many meetings over, you know, just this platform. But going to events, I always thought of events something that if we were able to produce an excellent event where people had an experience when they went to this one venue and they had a great time and they engaged with each other, how can we replicate that on a platform or virtually somehow, right? There's definitely going to be some things that will be cut off from that. Like, you know, you can't do everything like we used to do in person, but at least we can somewhat preserve the idea of an event with the use of technology and production. And that's what 2020 looks like. Now that we kind of hit the corner on the pandemic and hopefully we are able to gather, you know, based on where you are geographically, because there's certainly different rules that apply to wherever you are in the world right now, you know, wherever you're listening, you might be like, I don't know what you're talking about. We can't yet meet. We can't yet leave the house. You know, we, where we are right now, we can meet, like we can meet in numbers, you know, big numbers. So we can gather, we can have a party. Yet going back to that idea of gathering, because we had the exposure to a wider audience, to the reach that virtual events have provided and to the accessibility that virtual events have provided. Now, we don't just want to like throw that away and not make use of it. So that's what this idea of hybrid is really coming in hand, where yes, you can still have your in-person, maybe in the beginning, it's going to be a smaller gathering. Maybe it's going to take a different shape and form than what you're used to. What that looked like in 2019 might not be the first thing we're going to do, you know, in the fall of 2021, but it's going to be something where we can still take advantage of all the things that we've learned in 2020. And let me tell you, if you were in the event industry, you learn a lot of things. If you want it or you didn't, you still learn a lot of things because you were forced, you had to. You either did that and survived and made a way, or you maybe, I don't know, switch careers, start, you know, going into real estate. I know a lot of event planners that went into real estate because, I mean, at one point, you're going to have to figure out how you're going to pay your bills, right? So the fact that we had this adversity, I feel like it also brought a lot of opportunity. And that's really, hybrid event is the next best thing that could happen to events and gathering in person. And regardless of how people complain, you know, how tired they are of the digital events and the virtual events, we learn so much with this process that we want to be able to take those lessons learned and apply them as we move forward. I think that's kind of like the pretty much like giving you the super short story of what really it's been happening in case somebody was living under a rock, you know, and they're like, hey, what happened? What are you talking about?
It's interesting. There was a lot of things that happened during the pandemic that changed the way we just operate in general. And I think one of the fabulous things that happened is tools like Zoom allowed us to understand that going into the office is not required for a lot of these things, which is fabulous because I have no desire to go to a stupid office ever. Like, I don't want to do it. Like, if you want me to log on to Zoom to be part of the meeting or the whatever, that's great. But if I'm on the beach in Rio, I'm not turning my camera on so you can see that I'm having a great time when you're not. But you can create any kind of experience that you want to create. You can have engagement through the roof. The people that changed kind of the bare basics of how they did meetings and created a more of an event type thing and changed the length of the meeting, really, they had, you know, 5 stars on everything that they did. And the people that just moved the office meeting to a virtual meeting and just sat there like they were sitting around a board table, they hated it. And Zoom fatigue was a big thing and very huge. And I understand why that is. But there's people like yourselves that took events and brought them to the online space and created an actual experience. Now, whether you're doing in-person events or online events, if you're not creating a real experience, your events kind of suck. That's just how it is. The people have to be engaged. They have to enjoy it. Happy people spend money. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it's probably always going to be. So keeping people, how do you even keep people engaged in online events?
Man, it's definitely, it was a challenge and it will still be a challenge because like you said, you know, engagement was the essential ingredient for a virtual event and it still is the essential ingredient for a hybrid event as we move into some sort of a mix of, you know, a live and a virtual event. Just to kind of dial in what that actually means is, you know, having this event where both the in-person and the online audience are able to partake in this experience. Now, that is where the challenge lies because you could easily have an event in person and then stream it online to a platform like YouTube, Vimeo, whatever, Facebook Live, and then call it hybrid and your online audience never interacts with your in-person audience, nor does the in-person audience ever know that there is an online audience, right? So there's a way to do that. That's called more of a live cast, right? But how do you create this two-way communication where somebody that's in person, I mean, think of us being in person at a bar, getting a drink, talking. Is somebody online on your mind when you're like, you know, conversing with someone in person? That's a little hard, right? Unless you had a specific person in mind or maybe a connection you wanted to make and you know that that person is not there in person and you're going to want to reach out to figure out if they're maybe watching online, the chances are you're not going to want to, you know, step outside of this gathering to connect and see, okay, let's see who's watching us online right now, right? So that's the hardest part. Like, how do you do that in a way that there's this two-way, you know, interaction? But even that is a question of, is that even needed? Do we want that? Or should we just look at this hybrid model as two different experiences where the in-person is having their own experience, but the online audience is having their own experience without being separated from the event itself, right? Like, we're not talking about two different events. We're talking about one event, but two different experiences. And how do we create that? Because that's where the magic lies when it comes to engagement. Because you want someone that is watching online to be able to still say, hey, I'm getting a lot of value from this event. I'm actually really enjoying it, even though it kind of sucks that I can't be there in person. Or maybe I did not want to be there in person, because there's going to be choices that people make based on, you know, not just financial means of if I can make it, but also based on their schedule, based on like how comfortable they feel like getting in person, you know, and so many other aspects of like how far or geographically does it even make sense for me to take like 3 days out of my week to go to this event that happens in, I don't know, Las Vegas, you know, somewhere, right? Where now I can join and still be part of that virtually. Yet it's still worth and important to me to know if I am still, you know, blocking this amount of time out of my schedule, what am I getting in return? Because the more we've done all these virtual events in 2020, the more we've learned that now people are becoming very picky at choosing what type of experience they're going to engage in moving forward. Because by now we've seen so many events, and I don't know about you, but because I'm part of the event industry, I get to partake in so many events that either I join or I just host and produce. But then overall, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like it's been a million events. And which one really stood out? Let me think about it. Like, at this point, it's becoming a little hard, you know, to like even gauge it based on that, right? And one thing I can tell you, something that did stood out is something that had to do with an experience, maybe some entertainment, maybe some storytelling was really heartwarming, and especially taking it to the nonprofits, right? Because this is the nonprofit architect, and we want to touch on that. 2020 has been so heavy on nonprofit fundraising galas done virtually. And a lot of nonprofits that were able to move into that space and take the leap of faith, because it did take a leap of faith to be like, okay, we used to do events for 20 something years this way, and now you're asking us to change everything and do something like almost like getting into the unknown, like might as well fly on the moon. I don't know, pitch a tent there, you know, figure out like what you're going to do. But the ones that did trust that maybe there's a possibility of us actually reaching new donors. Maybe there's a possibility of us actually, you know, raising money and funding our services and our mission and our core values. Then those are the ones that actually were able to have a return on their investment. And yes, there was a little bit of, you know, advancement made in the technology used, or maybe if they use a platform, they're not cheap. Not all of them are cheap, right? I mean, you can find a platform like Zoom, sure. But still, if you want to add a little bit of extra to that, it's going to cost a little bit of money. But then the return on investment for a lot of the nonprofits has been really worth it, because not only did they increase their donor base, and now, you know, they're able to, you know, really truthfully go globally if they wanted to, but they were able to bring in funds, much needed funds, during a time when there's like no other options. So yeah, it was a matter of faith and choice, and then relying heavily on technology. And that's where I come in hand, you know, because technology and production have been really my background, and I'm passionate about that. But really helping and guiding all of our clients and the nonprofit organizations that have never done anything like that before was really where the hard work was put in, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And I know, like, there's still people that are very uncomfortable with things like COVID, and I am on one end of the spectrum. I should go anywhere and do whatever I want, whenever I feel like it. That's okay for me. And that's not okay for everybody. So offering someone the choice, I know out of the hundreds of nonprofits I've talked to over the last year, every nonprofit that continued to ask got more money than they've ever gotten. And those that chose not to ask for whatever reason, a lot of them received the fewest amount of donations and a lot closed their doors. So it's nice to have a thing like in a virtual or a hybrid event where you can engage people that maybe aren't so comfortable, and also people that can't travel or aren't going to travel or not able to travel for whatever reason. So I had a lot of friends that ran, you know, running nonprofits. So they did virtual 5Ks. Now it's been a year, so some people are kind of tired of it. But the first couple of them were great. They're like, you mean I don't have to drive 6 hours to be part of this thing? I can just go run around the neighborhood and still get the same, you know, the t-shirt and the medal and the number, and all the swag, and I can still participate and still raise money. And you lose a little bit not being around other people, but you also save a lot. If I had a 2-hour commute, I've got a friend here that's got a 2-hour commute. He lives essentially in Arkansas, and he drives into Oklahoma City to work, and it's almost 2 hours each direction. Well, 4 hours, 5 times a week, that's 20 hours worth of commuting time that he now saves and can use for something else if he's able to work virtually. So it's wonderful for things like that. For me, I get a little sad because I lose a lot of my audiobook time, because I always listen to audiobooks or podcasts whenever I'm traveling.
Absolutely.
Out. Oh, yeah. Love them. Absolutely love them.
I'm kind of sad on that as well, because when I moved from Portland, Oregon, I moved away from Portland because of the commute. But at the same time, the downside of that is my audio listening and the books that I used to listen and podcasts, it just went down, because now I do everything in a 3-mile radius. I mean, how long can I listen to something in a 3-mile radius?
Well, you got to change when you listen, right? You got to change it instead of commuting and maybe working out. You change it to while you're running errands and you've got it in your ear while you're grocery shopping, or maybe when you're, you know, doing chores around the house or whatever the thing is. I had people listening to the Nonprofit Architect podcast at physical locations. They were listening to it in the office. So everyone in the office was hearing A, my beautiful voice, and B, all my great guests and all the wonderful things they had to share and teach. They were able to listen to that in the office throughout the day. And they were like, hold on, go back. I got to take notes on this thing. I got to write this down, which was cool for me, because I'm just here to provide value and provide the conduit really for my guests to share their expertise and the cool things that they do. So it was really cool for me to hear something like that. You know, and if you're listening to this right now, let me know, hop in the Facebook group or send me a message and say, this is how we listen to your show, or when we do it, we found that this works best for us during the pandemic or closed off times or after a schedule change, how you do that best. Please drop me a note so I can know how you all enjoy this and what app you listen on. That would be fantastic. But I want to know.
And that's actually, Travis, that's something very awesome that you just said there. Right now, you're literally crowdsourcing and using data to help your podcast, right? To make sure that you provide value to your audience. The same thing happened with us moving into this virtual event format of events, because in-person events for the longest time have been kind of like a leaky bucket when it came to data and metrics. We didn't really truly measure, you know, what people did and how they engage and how do you get, you know, all that data that helps you improve your event. But with virtual events, we are able to capitalize on so much of that information and realize, oh my gosh, there's a lot of things we didn't know about events until we are able to measure it in a way that we can see it. You know, when you see someone drop off, you know, 20 minutes into your event or 5 minutes into your event, that tells you a lot about your event, right? That tells you a lot about like the type of formatting or maybe the type of like, you know, storytelling or whatever is good or not good with the event. You can now go back and start manipulating a little bit of the formatting to make sure that you can generate a better event next time. And that has been one of the biggest things that I can take away from, you know, the fact that we did so many virtual events in 2020, but because we've learned so much of like the audience persona and the audience interaction, the audience engagement, how do they actually consume those events? Now we can apply some of that data for our future of events. And that is priceless, if you ask me.
Yeah, if you're in the nonprofit space and you're not collecting data for everything that you do, you're doing it wrong. Because how on earth do you have any clue if the things that you're doing are working if you don't collect the data? You know, reach out to the people that dropped offline. Did they drop off because they had something else scheduled? Did something come up? Or did they switch off because it wasn't interesting? It didn't grab their attention. They didn't feel involved or they didn't feel like your messaging met them. See if you can find out why that is so you can adjust what it is that you're doing. I've talked to a lot of event coordinators and their biggest goal is to keep the engagement high and really how to monetize every minute of this thing. So, I mean, what does that event look like when you're trying to put on an event, both in person and online, this hybrid event? How do you keep both audiences engaged? And do they see the same thing?
One example, just one quick example I'm going to give of an actual fundraising gala that happened just mid-June, which was a hybrid, right? So what we had, we put this event at a winery, a beautiful winery in Oregon, and we had a venue, which was more like a tent, but it was dressed up, beautiful. Like people were there because they want, I mean, it sold out in the first 2 weeks when we, you know, we put out the opening of the registration because people wanted to be in person. And we still want, because we sold out for the in-person, which was only about 200, then we're like, okay, but normally this event usually holds about 500, 600 guests. Let's open up the virtual aspect and create something just for our virtual audience so they still join if they can, since they can't do it in person, right? So, you know, a regular fundraising gala, like the regular model of a fundraising gala where you have, you know, maybe a keynote speaker or something, you know, talking about the mission, the reason for why we're gathering, you know, obviously you have all the food and beverage and all the booze because you want people to have a good time. But we started with the VIP reception and then we brought everyone to dinner. Then we had, you know, the opening, we had someone speak about why we're there, the reasoning for it. And then we had an auctioneer do the ask. Now during the ask is, this is where we wanted to transition from for the online audience, because the online audience, they already had a different experience where when we had a VIP reception, we had an actually a concert violinist play separately in a separate location that was set up with a separate camera, a separate feed for the virtual audience so they can tune in and still partake. But instead of like seeing people like mingling and like getting drinks, which would be super boring to like, yeah, okay, I can see that you guys are having fun, but right now I'm having a really bad case of FOMO because I'm not there, right? So you don't want to show that. I mean, you know it's happening, but at the same time, by grabbing their attention to pay attention to this entertainment act, we basically gave them something to be engaged into. And we, you know, you could even do things like, hey, drop in the chat, you know, your favorite song or something that you want our performer to, you know, play next. So that way you grab a little bit of their attention, but also you involve them. So they're not just spectators, but they're also involved in that production, you know.
And so do you have an online producer that helps like coordinate the chat?
Yeah.
And stuff
so
like
you
that?
Have separate teams, you know, doing the in-person. That's why somewhat, you know, when you talk about hybrid events and the budget, are they costly or not? The answer is yes and no. Depends how involved you want to be, right? So because we had this two different experiences of the same event, we had to have a team that was doing the like regularly, like your normal audiovisual in-person production team. And then we had to have a virtual team that, you know, it was a smaller team, but you still have to have a camera. You still have to have a producer. You still have to have someone mixing levels. You know, you still have to have a little bit of extra to help with that production. And we had someone, you know, to call the show so that when that entertainment part was over, then we transitioned into some content and we were playing, you know, a few videos and things that highlighted the mission, storytelling of what exactly is happening here. And while all of this was happening in the tent with the ask, we had a few like 5-minute interviews for some of the top donors or sponsors, just give them a 5-minute, you know, prime time to talk about the heart behind their mission. Like, why are they there? Why are they supporting this nonprofit? And what impact did this nonprofit have on them, right? And their work and their company and their whatever day-to-day work. So that was fantastic because now you drew people in with seeing those CEOs of companies that you've heard of, you know, like, and we're talking about California Closets and we're talking about big names that, you know, in this particular area, the nonprofit that we were with had a huge impact in what they were doing, right? And then talk about how they support this nonprofit with their resources to continue the mission. And then once we've done, you know, all that, we went back to entertainment and we went back to having a few more songs played. And then just towards the end, we transitioned the feed from the virtual for the separate experience back to the in-room experience for the closing. So that's kind of like a model of, it doesn't have to be the model, but it can be one model because this can be done in so many different ways based on what your organization is about, based on your audience, based on who is your donor base, based on who are your sponsors, based on so many like stakeholders. Again, going back to that data, like you're going to have to pull a lot of that information mm-hmm. on strategy, on how you're going to make this event based on data and based on like what you know about your event, what you want to, what are the goals and what are you trying to accomplish, you know, with the information at hand. And I feel like the biggest challenge for some of the event coordinators, event planners, event organizer is being able to read this data, because not everybody is a data analyst. You know, not everybody sees like looks at a spreadsheet and be like, that's right. I can totally see the trends here. Like, no, most people, they just see numbers. They're like, this doesn't tell me anything. So sometimes, you know, the next role you're going to want to add maybe to your board is someone that can analyze that data. And that's someone that can actually take that, all those numbers and all those graphs, and create a plan for your next event, because that's going to be priceless in the way you're going to produce your next event, you know. So going back to the cost of that production, just on this example, I can tell you that that event compared to the 2019 version of the same event was about a time and a half more expensive. But again, it's because we wanted to spend our money not just on the in-person experience, but also giving the virtual audience a separate experience. Can you do it on a budget? Sure. Here's where I want to give you the tip of how you can do it on a budget. Say you go in person, you meet, I don't know, 200, 300 people in a room. You're going to want to have some AV. You're going to want to have some production. You're going to have someone to, you know, monitor your audio levels, to project things on screens. Lighting is going to be important as well. So you're going to have a team, even though in the back of the room, you never pay attention. They're there. They're going to take care of your event. But now, how about we add an extra element to that, and could be as simple as one camera at the back of the room can zoom in, and now we can send that feed online. That is leveraging what you already have in the room with adding a little extra, which probably is going to be the cost of the camera, cost of the extra person that's going to have to run it, and a cost of the web streaming service that you're going to have to use somehow, right? I mean, sure, you can just stream it to YouTube on a budget. Yes, there's ways in which you can produce a hybrid event, but I would say the moment you allocate a little bit of extra money to that production that goes to the hybrid, to the virtual, where you could have this MC that only is there for entertaining and engaging the virtual audience? Because that was another key element of our fundraising gala that I talked about. We had an MC that was just for the virtual audience. They were there to tell them what's happening, to introduce the next element, to, you know, engage them. And it wasn't the person on stage in the room that did that. That person on stage in the room was paying attention to what's happening in the room because we want them to, you know, to engage who's there. And I feel like a little bit of the miss happens when this one person is trying to do both jobs. And you can't. You just, you know, I mean, sure, you're going to engage the in-person audience, but then you're going to have to talk about, you know, this invisible audience that's somewhere watching you. And it's going to feel like a little weird. I tried to do that. Actually, one of the first events I've done was in March that was hybrid. And I was also the MC. And I tried to engage both audiences. It felt so weird because you're like, people in the room do not see the people online, but I know there's people online because I see it on the screen, in a preview monitor in front of me. But as I'm talking to these people online, the people in the room, I'm like, stop talking to someone that I can see. You know, this is weird. Like, just focus on me because that's why I'm here, you know? So that's why absolutely, if you can manage to do two separate MCs and then allocate a little bit of that budget, because let's talk about budget, right? You're not going to have the same food and beverage budget and the same venue size budget in the beginning, because our gatherings are going to be a little smaller in the beginning, right? We might meet in 50 numbers, 100, 200, but I highly doubt that you're going to go from like 0 to 1,000 in the span of a few months, right? So then that budget that you used to have for a gathering of 1,000 people, now is shrinked to maybe a gathering of 200. You now have some room to allocate to the production, to the technology that makes this experience now be hybrid, right? So there's ways to maneuver numbers. I mean, if you've ever worked on a spreadsheet, you know you can maneuver the numbers to work in your favor, right? So that's the same way with event budget. You know, is it costly? Yes and no. But at the end of the day, you're going to want to know what is the reason for your event in the first place, and what are you going to do to create this event to be memorable, but also engaging for your own audience, whatever your audience is looking for.
Mm-hmm. I've seen this go a lot of different ways. I've seen it go good and go bad and go sideways. One of the things that I've seen that's helped out quite a bit, especially like the cocktail hour, I've seen where on the online or hybrid events, they send out a cocktail list and they create these breakout rooms so people can mingle in the online space while they're mingling in person. So you're not losing that, because that's a lot of people, that's one of their favorite things, is to be able to rub elbows, so to speak, with the other people at the guest. And then I've seen where there was a guy that did an in-person MC, and he also had a lot of different polls and different things set up. So he wanted people that were in the room and people that were online on their phones, because you collect emails and details about people. But he was asking them the same questions. That, yeah, go ahead and pull out your phone real quick. Those of you online, hop over to this thing here. I want to know, where do you spend your weekends or whatever it is? And you're collecting, they don't maybe see it with this way, but you're collecting data on who they are as people, so you understand your donor better and the people that engage with you better. And so while you're engaging the people online, the people in person are actually following along and doing something as well. So they don't feel left out during these different times.
But that takes one person that's focusing on that audience, right? Because if the person that's on stage doing the, you know, whatever is happening on stage that I'm seeing there and hosting, if they try to do that at the same time, you would lose one or the other. You can't really manage both. So that's why it's so important to have that separate MC dedicated just for your online audience. And even if you at one point come back together to the one event with one experience, you're still able to pull, you know, a lot of the, hey, they had this unique experience that they were able to engage in because somebody actually catered to their needs, right? Based on like using the, again, going back to the use of technology, going back to the use of the polling and the chatting functions. And there's so many tools right now, I feel like, that people can use. You just want to be willing to, you know, and want to be willing to spend some time. Like even with the presentations, like, you know, so many of us went to events and we were like, experiencing this death by PowerPoint. It's like slide after slide after slide. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die if there's another slide, you know. But you can engage so much of different tools now, even in your PowerPoint presentations, so that you just don't just like try to feed people as much as content as you can possibly do. And instead you stop and then receive, so that you for yourself know, am I even like hitting the mark here? Like, am I even talking about what they want to hear? Or I'm just going on and on and on because I've, in my mind, I've already preset what I'm going to be talking about, right? And again, data, going back to that.
Mm-hmm. That's fabulous. Tell me about a time where you were doing an event, COVID or not, where everything just fell apart.
I don't think there's actually been a time where everything fully 100% fell apart, because I mean, that's the reason why we have contingency plans. But I can remember not too far away, unfortunately, an event where some of it fell apart. And this was, again, coming back to the hybrid experience, right? It was a hybrid conference, and it was supposed to be at a venue locally with 2 days. And the organizer wanted to, just because we haven't been able to meet in person, pack the agenda full with keynote after keynote after keynote. And we knew we had a good audience online that was going to join us based on our registration numbers. But even there, like if you have 1,000 people registering online, the likelihood of maybe 40% to actually be present, that's sort of like, you know, where you're looking at. Those are the numbers, really, because 100% of 1,000 people are not going to be there. Even if your event is the most amazing, spectacular. I mean, I've seen the landing of the rover on the moon, and even there, like we broadcasted that live, and even there, we did not have the same number of registrants as, you know, as we saw it on paper. So this particular event was going to be streaming to YouTube, to this online audience, and we're going to have about 100, 150 in person. It was a smaller in person. The morning before the event, the morning when we're going to go and move in to set up, you know, because there was some setup involved. Obviously, there's setup involved with an in-person event, you know. I get a call that half of my labor is not available anymore because they were pulled. And this is freelancers. And this is one of the things that you might run into as you come back to in-person events as an event producer, event organizer, to realize that a lot of the contacts, a lot of the suppliers, a lot of the people that you used to work with or rely on, they're no longer available. They're either out of business or they move into another field, right? Or they could be like very much, you know, saying, yeah, I'm going to be there, but I'm actually going to be somewhere else. And I'm going to be booking myself 3 times and just see what works. So that's what happened to my labor. Like they booked themselves twice. And then the morning of, it's like, oh, by the way, I'm sorry, we can't make it. I'm sorry, you have to find someone else. So at this point, I'm like literally like calling like every single person that I know that could be there, because I need to set up this event. And I'm not going to be like there by myself setting up for a conference, a 2-day conference. So somehow by noon, this was 8 a.m., by noon, I managed to get, you know, people on site. We set up, we have the rehearsals, we're fine. But then the labor that was there for setup could not be the same labor that was there for the event. Because again, I'm at this point, I'm like patching things together because I got to make it work, right? So I get this vendor supplier to send me some technicians, and they're qualified technicians. Only what they don't tell me is that this guy that is supposed to be running audio, he's actually a lighting guy. He's never really done audio before. And I'm sure he can figure it out. I mean, how complicated can it be, right? Then this other guy that is going to be running the camera, he's actually on pain medicine because he hurt his back, and he's so high that he can't even like keep it straight. So the camera is like just panning left and right like this. And I'm like in the back of the room, and I'm like directing this thing and producing this thing, and I'm giving instructions over comm, you know, to my audio tech to EQ volume and EQ voices. And oh my goodness, let me just say that we pulled that event like you would just try to pull at a string and try to make it work. But at the end of the day, I was so tired mentally, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I can do another day. And all in all I can say is that we did the event. We managed to have an event, but the amount of work that I had to do post-event in content editing, was unbelievable because I still had to produce content. This was going to be something that each keynote was going to be released, you know, on a specific content schedule. And I remember like editing through the night, like a maniac in the days afterwards, just to clean up, just to produce all this video files. And I said to myself, man, never again, never again will I use one, this vendor and that supplier and that vendor, because it was just so painful. So that's one example of like trying to make it work with the resources at hand and then paying the cost of time in cleaning things up, because luckily I didn't lose the client, but I could tell the client was not happy at the end of the day. And that to me was heartache, you know, because I'm like, it's actually my name that I'm putting on this. And right now I am not happy with how this has been delivered, right? So yeah, that's one example. And that's how we felt about a lot of virtual events. And that's why a lot of event organizers are very, you know, fearful when you tell them that a virtual event can be a wonderful experience. They're like, yeah, right. I remember my last experience. It was terrible. But again, it goes back to who's on your core, who's on your team, what are the type of suppliers that you're using. If you're going to try to do it yourself, the likelihood of you hitting every mark, every transaction, let's just say it's going to be probably very low. And then, you know, the product that you're delivering is going to have the same, like the same value as you. If you knew during the event that something doesn't work and you're losing your audience. And also, you know, going back to that particular event, we lost about 50% of our in-person audience just by the formatting of the event, because we had way too much content, way too many speakers, and we tried to pack so much in one day that was just not possible. I mean, people cannot go back from no events to full-on events without a little bit of a transition. Like I remember at times I was trying to hide in the restroom because I needed just some quiet time. Like I just needed to, like, you know, because it's like way too much stimulation. And I'm like, I need some space. Like when I'm at home working in my office and doing, you know, meeting after meeting, I can still pack some quiet time, you know. But when you're somewhere in the middle of like a bunch of people and you're engaging it, fantastic. You're going to have to think of like how people come from a month of not seeing other people and being in the middle of like a mix of people, you know? So that's going to take, again, back to strategy, back to some of the touch points that you're going to have to think through your event, like how you're going to create that experience, not just for your virtual event, but also for your in-person event, because those are people, real people with real feelings and real fears and anxiety attacks, you know, that are going to be like, oh my gosh, this is way too much. I mean, yes, I was fantasizing about how I want to go and meet in person, but this is too much. Like I need to find a hiding spot right now.
I tell you, we got invited to our friend's wedding, and it was out at Lake Tahoe. We're in Oklahoma City. We had to fly out there and stuff. And the ask came, I was talking to the bride, and she broke down and she's like, Travis, like we don't have like the maid of honor quit, the person that was going to run the thing, like the wedding planner just like walked off and this and that. And we just, and so I've got a little bit of experience in this. And when I say a little bit of experience, I mean a little bit of experience. I'm not some kind of world-class producer or anything, you know, at this point in time. I'm not saying I won't be in the future, but my wife flew out there and we took over. We were supposed to be guests and enjoying the wedding. And we took over the whole production. The maid of honor didn't show up. The people brought the food, but they didn't bring anyone to serve the food. So my wife and I are coordinating where people are going to be, what time they're going to be there. We're grabbing people that we know from the audience and say, you're going to help serve food and get set up. And we did, I mean, we did a fabulous job. My wife and I didn't get to see the wedding, but we got to see, you know, the bride and groom when they're all said and done, who were so thankful and so happy to get these things in. But this kind of stuff happens. You know, when you are putting together an event and you're talking to an event and a production team and they're very experienced and they've got all their people and all the things that they've done, And knowing that they have a quality team that's going to follow through, and they've done this before, and they've got backup mics, and they've got extra batteries, and they've got these things set up, and they know how to set up, like, it's well worth the cost of production. It is well worth it. You're going to get a quality thing.
It's worth not having to stress about it and not having to figure it out in the moment, because I'm telling you, the anxiety that can come over you while you're trying to figure out things that you're not familiar with, it's not worth anything in the world.
It's not. And I always want to start, like when I started this podcast, you can start for free. You can download Anchor. You can go for free. You can just use your smartphone or whatever. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I wanted to make sure that I was starting a quality production. So I started with a production value pretty high. I hired a team right off the bat. And when I look at my nonprofit experience that I've done, the things that we've tried to kind of bootstrap together, you can tell. And when you want to be high quality from the start, you're going to have to pay those higher prices and get the right team in, because you don't want to look like how you do one thing is how you do all things. And if you put together a production that is not at the quality of operation you're normally doing, it's going to hurt you more than it's going to help you. So if you can't afford it, maybe don't do the event the way you're thinking about. Do something that's going to be quality.
But do on a smaller scale.
On a smaller scale, and people are going to be shouting your name from the rooftops for the right reason and not for the wrong reasons. As we're getting ready to wrap up here, Anca, what are some of your quick, like, five best tips that you want to help someone that's trying to put together an event? What things do they got to make sure they get right?
So in the idea of this, you know, hosting an event that has a polished look and has a higher production value, I would say, learn from my experience, do not skimp on qualified labor. If you think your cousin can run sound, or your, third cousin has done some lighting, that's fantastic. But if you really want to put on an event, I would say go with someone that actually has some backing up of what they've done. And it's something that they do for a living, as opposed to once in a 5-year blue moon type of thing, you know. And also use, you know, there's so many tools, like be curious about the type of cool tools that you could be using to elevate the production value of this event that you're thinking to put together. And finding, if you're not necessarily that type of tech savvy kind of person, finding a production partner that can execute this excellent event, not just in person, but also, you know, for some type of a virtual audience, is another tip that I would just, so worth it. I would give it, because I know it's worth it. I know it'll pay off in the end, like you said, Travis. Then, you know, being prepared is certainly a key ingredient to a lot of polished event productions and events in general. And when it comes to that, you know, polished production, your guests might not remember their meal, but they will certainly remember what went wrong with your event. So that is something that you should keep in mind next time you're thinking at this extravagant meal, but your microphone is like feedbacking left and right, and your PA cannot support, you know, the range that it needs to for this audience that you thought, oh, it's okay. Like, it's a karaoke machine setup that works just fine in that bar. I mean, could it not work for our event too? And I've seen people get on top of tables and using a karaoke machine as amplification. And no, it cannot work the same way. I promise you. Another easy tip to make your production look and feel more polished is branding. Maybe spend some time, you know, creating some branded graphics and transitions and some of backgrounds and even lower thirds labels that you can use if you're broadcasting the event, so that you already put your front of the event looks like very polished. Like, if you're looking at anything that is generated on TV right now that is content, none of it is just, you know, the black and white zoom, right? It would have lower thirds. You would have some branding. You would have some things flying off the screen, right? It doesn't have to be extravagant, but it has to be enough engaging to grasp somebody's attention, you know? And technical rehearsals and technical checks. I mean, from a production point of view, no matter how much planning you put into an event, if you don't do anything about rehearsals and about technical checks, the chances of your event to go just a little bit south are very high. So make sure that you plan not just time, but budget, because you're going to plan, say, a block of like 2 hours for a technical check that costs a little extra money, right? Because now you have those people there for 2 extra hours. And don't skimp on that, because transitions is where you can tell that event was rehearsed versus this was just put together and like things are just flying like off the cuff because nobody knows what's happening next, right? My last tip, I guess, is if you're on a budget, especially if you're thinking of this hybrid production, pre-recording your content is certainly a budget-friendly option so that you can pre-record everything. There's a lot of less liability involved with pre-recording, and then you can still stream it like you were live without, you know, being live. And if you think about a lot of the high value productions that are happening, very few are truly 100% live unless maybe you're Saturday Night Live. But most of them are pre-recorded and on a schedule. And the same thing can be done with your event. And then there is no, you know, anxiety. Oh my gosh, what if we can get the speaker live? What if his internet connection just drops in the middle of this important keynote, you know? And you can brand it to exactly what it needs to be. So it has the same, you know, custom look like your entire event. Travis, you're muted.
That's such fantastic and fabulous tips. I wanted to thank you today for all your insight from everything that you do. Where can people find you and get a hold of you, find your show and all those things?
I am on most social media platforms. I'm obviously a millennial that loves social media. But if you want to find me professionally, that would be LinkedIn, Anca Trifan, and Trifan Events, TREEFAN Events is my company page on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. Although I think that if you want to know what I'm doing, probably would be Instagram. If you want to know what I'm up to as far as, you know, professionally, it would be LinkedIn. And if you want to see behind the scenes stuff, that was like, you know, it'd be Instagram stories. And then for the podcast, eventsdemystified.com is the website. And then you can find it on all really podcasting platforms, most of the major ones. And I look up, you know, I look for feedback from anyone that's listening to the podcast, because again, I'm very much interested in making sure that the content that's released is valuable and is helpful to whomever is listening. If you're going to put a half an hour of your time into listening to something, might as well gain some insight and learn something.
Thank you so much for being here today, Anca. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Travis.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.